Accession number 17840, Reel 2.
Arthur Morris, Reel 2. So, when the war hotted up in the spring with Norway and France, were you still in England?
Yes, we were in England and went to a considerable number of places. And we were in... when we moved to France, we went as a battalion, obviously, landed in... we were down on the south coast, incidentally, when we left, and the shipping armada was all formed up to go, and we were in several little places at different times over a period on the south coast before embarking for Arromanches on the French coast. That was for to take part in the landing.
But before you went to Normandy, had you been on coastal defence in Britain?
In most cases, yes. I don't recollect any sort of main station other than probably Maidstone, which was one of the places that was inland. Apart from that, all the rest were Dover. We were at Shorncliffe in Folkestone, Dover, Deal, Sandwich, all more or less on the coast, all the way around that area.
When France collapsed in the summer of 1940, did you think that Britain would come to an agreement with Hitler, or did you think that England would fight on?
No, I thought that England would fight on, because in the services, although probably we didn't know too much about the Germans, other than the fact that they were, I think, a very disciplined force, and we knew that they were not going to be an easy kettle of fish, so to speak, in beating. But I think that we had no doubts that we wanted to. But was not. It didn't come to us what we really had to do to beat them in the end, as far as the normal soldier was concerned, which we found out when we landed. They were a difficult kettle of fish, so to speak, very determined.
So when 1944 came round, were you still in the same battalion?
Yes. I fought with the 4th Battalion throughout the period in the war.
What rank had you achieved by the time Normandy came?
When we landed, I was a private soldier. When on Hill 112, I had been made a sergeant. Not, I think, by choice of being any different or more advanced than any other of my comrades, I think, but due to casualties and being with the same platoon all the way through, that one was promoted according to seniority more so than any other aspect of it.
Before we go on to the fighting in Normandy, can you take me through the preparations for that you went through for going across to Normandy?
Yes, we were down on the coast, going from place to place, so to speak. We were at Shorncliffe, and then along to Dymchurch, Storrington, a number of places I well remember. And during that time, we were used as doing spare time jobs for the colleges or schools like the mortar platoon demonstration area, the schools that were held to advance the instructors to such a high standard that they could help themselves and help the other members in their platoons, in their own battalions. And of course there were courses going on, the usual thing. And we stayed in that area for most of our time before we were embarking, or told that we would no doubt be embarking for France, which eventually we were, and that was in the area of Dymchurch on the south coast.
What happened then?
We had the, all these troop carrying small ships which pulled up, and we walked on open top type landing ships with the, where the front part of it was a flat which went down by the people that were in charge of that vehicle for landing purposes. In other words, we ran off of it, or for vehicles, the vehicle itself was the same as those that carried the motor vehicles, only on a smaller scale. But when we got to the other side, eventually, of course, the fronts go flat down, and you just dash off. In our particular instance, the ones that I was on, they were all infantry, no vehicles, all infantry, and we landed in about 5 foot of water on getting into the Arromanches on the French side. So then we were, you know, in 5 foot of water, we just scrambled ashore and took cover, if we were being machine gunned by the Germans, which by this time were quite a way back, really. I would have said sort of 5 to 8 miles as a line of troops. They had their little pockets of resistance with the odd machine gunner, which got left behind either by force or unfortunately, but they shot the occasional round, and we either overcome them, took them prisoner, and moved on from there. It was not a case of stopping and digging in or anything like that. You just kept going. And somewhere along the line, we would overcome them and just get them with their hands on their heads and tell them to start walking. And in the rear, they would get looked after and taken back to where they had to assemble.
Did you land on D-Day itself?
No. I don't remember quite off, but I think we landed somewhere about 10 days or a fortnight after the main landing had taken place. But of course, en route, although we might have been 10 or 14 days, there were still little pockets, as I said earlier, of resistance, which had got left behind, and they'd either kept quiet until in their little holes, doggos they called them, until somebody thought, well, they'd have a pop at somebody, but they eventually got picked up and either taken prisoner, or mostly taken prisoner, because it wasn't our job to hurt them. Once we had passed them, that was it. They had their lot, one way or the other.
Which platoon and company were you with when you landed?
I landed with Brava Company, B Company. As a bugler, a private soldier, same, but of course, in those days, I still carried my bugle in my little pack that I wore on my back, and I was fortunate, I suppose, I can say fortunate now. I was, as far as I remember, the first bugler of the 4th Battalion to sound last post in Rivali over Don. As far as I remember, I was the first bugler of the Somerset Light Infantry to sound last post in Rivali at the first death of the soldier at Arromanches on landing. And it was a part of a daily routine, anything like that. You were just called upon, would you do a bugler to a funeral? Well, a funeral, the death hall, and that was it, unfortunately.
What would you play at a funeral?
Well, it would be, I mean, that, you know, I say when they put them in the box or in the hole in there, because there's no boxes, they just dug them in, the bodies. But they would have taken off their necessary discs to know who they were, and they would have been wrapped up with whatever they used in those days, canvas of sorts, and it would be an open funeral. You know, in the field, a hole dug, and put it in with a disc on it, given the details of what it was, who it was, etc.
But what tune would you play at the
Last Postionary Valley?
Was that laid down as?
Oh yes, yes, yes.
Were the funerals very affecting, or did you just take it as a matter of course?
Well, I think they were, if anything, they were a little bit frightening, because we hadn't had to do anything like this before. And therefore, it was all a matter of shock.
You said you were with B Company. Do you remember which platoon you were with?
Not offhand, no.
So you were pushing further inland. Can you take it from there, please?
Well, we went for Hill 112. That was our objective, to meet up with other regiments in the brigade and, for that matter, the division, which was the 43 Wessex Division. And the Duke of Cornwall Light Infantry was a member, as far as I remember, of our brigade at the time, and they finished up to our right on Hill 112 at a place called, or noted to have been called by virtue of the campaign, known as Cornwall Woods, because they lost so many men in the two woods that had been held by the Germans. In fact, the Germans, I think they had their tanks in the woods when the Duke of Cornwall landed, and therefore, of course, got really beaten up, and there was quite a number of casualties on Hill 112, which was to our right. There was the Somerset Light Infantry on the left, Duke of Cornwall Light Infantry on the right. And that's how we stayed until we moved off, having secured the area, and the Germans, having either disappeared, withdrew, what have you. But they could only have withdrawn towards Caen on their way back. But that was some time after we had landed. We were there on Hill 112 for a week or so. There were always battles going on, snipers and little pockets being pushed out by the Germans to try to get us to retreat or what have you, whatever they had in their mind.
Were you personally in any attacks that were launched on the hill?
Well, not what you can call attacks. We were actually in a position, we had already dug in our trenches, and although we had very little overhead cover, because there was nothing to get any cover from, i.e. there was no houses or anything in the area, vicinity, where one could get a door or a top of a piano or something like that and use as overhead cover with some earth over the top of that to secure the possibilities of being covered by shrapnel or shelling or things like that. But other than that, we stayed there until all was well so that we can move on to our next objective.
What were your trenches like?
Well, they were all trenches that, in the main, there were the odd one or two that had been formerly used by the Germans, which they'd vacated, obviously, on our arrival there. But they were pretty rough. There were no overhead cover on any of them. We had to try to make the best we could with it. So where we didn't have overhead cover, we would ensure that we had opened up an area towards the enemy where the shells, if we were going to get shelling, it would land to the rear part of the trench instead of the front part. So obviously you cut an area towards the enemy so that they're not going to get any bullets coming actually into you from their area, if you see what I mean. If it's an open trench, then obviously you don't want to be on the far side of it from the enemy, because things could pop in, grenades or anything could be thrown in. Not that you stand any chance if one is thrown in anyway, under any whatever condition.
Was your unit taking many casualties at Hill 112?
No, we were, I would say, rather fortunate than a lot of others in other battles. We had a few casualties, but not a great number of casualties. Having said that, I remember on Hill 112 myself getting pretty quickly promoted. I think, as I said earlier, I think I was a corporal, lance corporal and a corporal on Hill 112, and then later on very quickly went to a sergeant.
Did any of your friends get injured?
Well, there were a number of friends injured, names I do not remember all, naturally, but I remember a anti-tank, one of our supporting platoons of our regiment, was forward to us, and this man now lives up the other side of Bristol, who I see from time to time. He was an anti-tank gunner, and I'd overheard that he had been wounded. So, as is as usual in the front line, one of the quick remedies to assist in the well-being of any soldier when he's been wounded, provided not too badly, is a hot cup of sweet tea, which I remember making and taking over about 300 yards away to this young chap, who I knew very well. And he, as I say, I see him from time to time. He lives the other side of, just the other side of Bristol. So he was badly wounded. He was an anti-tank gunner. And occasionally, of course, you did get accidents.
How had he been wounded?
Well, shells in the main. Shelling, unfortunately, got caught in the leg.
How frightening was it in these trenches at Hill 112?
Oh, very frightening. Very frightening indeed. There was no overhead cover, and of course we had occasional visits. Luckily enough, and I can emphasize luckily enough, because it was all in the open. There was no cover, very few trees. Therefore, it was a cornfield initially, all trampled down by this time by foot by the soldiers, both German and ourselves. And it was frightening, and easy access for the Luftwaffe, the German fighters. But God was on our side in that we had no visits, other than the latter part of our period on Hill 112, when in actual fact the German fighters, one or two German fighters, went over Messerschmitts, but didn't machine gun us or anything like that. They just flew over and back. But no doubt they were looking to see what the situation was on the hill, should they have wanted to counterattack and take it back again.
Were you being supported from the air?
Yes, we always had our fighters around although not very many at any one particular time, but they were there, and we had every assistance right the way through, even later on in the war, from the Royal Air Force. They gave us tremendous backing.
In what kind of weather were you fighting?
At the time when we were on here, 1-2, it was all fairly good weather. Warm during the day, bright nights. So with our patrols, we could see what we wanted to see, as much as we wanted to see, under the circumstances.
Did you go out on patrol yourself?
Yes, on one or two occasions, but not very far. It was more or less on the perimeter of the unit, battalion perimeter, just to make certain that there is not anyone forming up for an attack of any nature.
Did you see anything on the patrols or hear anything?
I think, looking back, you would hear from time to time what would can be considered as a small number of enemy going up a track, for instance. And you, under normal circumstances, through your O groups, your company O groups, which is when the company commander got them together and said, platoon so-and-so and so, you're right on the side of a track, so keep yourselves weary of any attack from the tracks or anybody walking about other than your own people, so that you can inform us as and when we can expect any attack from anybody. These are normal things in a light infantry unit or an infantry unit, especially when, of course, they're in the front line. But we were fortunate in that I think the Germans knew that there were so many of us there that they were not going to try any what I would call funnies, looking back on it, knowing very well that they would have got captured anyway because there's too many of our own chaps around.
What were you armed with at Hill 112?
We had our own machine guns, little Sten guns, or rifles resting on, if you were a platoon corporal, or you would have had a little machine gun, little Sten gun rather, with a magazine of about 20 rounds. And the remaining soldiers, a private soldier in your section or platoon, would normally have a rifle, Lee Enfield rifle, 303, whatever it was in those days.
Were you happy with the weapons you had?
Well, I don't think one can say he was happy with the weapon. It's the fact was he was trained with it and obviously knew what to do in his eventuality of being attacked, etc. I think that looking back on reflection, if we had all had, under the circumstances, and this I think has got to be taken in consideration, if you're in a close confined area, then of course a magazine on a weapon is much better than having a rifle where you only got about 5 or 10 rounds at the most. And secondly, a rifle where you're going to need it for long distance, 100, 200, 300 yards, is different than a little machine gun where you can get rid of them quite readily if they're in, say, anything up to 50 yards. So, you know, you can contend with them better if you've got a small machine gun of sorts.
What were your orders about the use of ammunition?
Well, obviously you try to keep ammunition expenditure under control for any eventuality. There's always a case of, or let me say, there's never a case when you want to fire rounds just for the sake of firing them. You just reserve and keep your ammunition until you have got to use it. So it's also vital, really.
What opinion of the enemy did you form in the fighting by the time of 112?
Well, they were obviously considered as very efficient fighters, that there is no doubt, which we proved later on in our campaign. They were very efficient fighters, the Germans, and seemed to be, didn't lack that little bit of guts, as we say it, to have a go if and when the time came.
Did the Somerset soldiers feel any hatred towards the enemy, do you think?
Well, I think there was obviously a lot of animosity of their, what they had done over the years before, and if not hatred. But like all soldiers, I think soldier to soldier, one always considers, well, you know, what are we expecting them to do? What can we expect them to do? Well, I personally thought, well, if I don't shoot him or, you know, kill him just for the sake of killing him, then I won't get done myself. And I think this was a general attitude of look after yourself and don't shoot without you got to. And I think this is the thing that paid off well, I think, and saved a hell of a lot of casualties.
When you were there for that week at Hill 112, did you despair of breaking through?
No. I think the company or battalion as a whole worked as a great team, and with the backing from everyone. And I think this showed off to the Germans, I think, in that they were not given any leeway, and I'm sure that by the time that we were on Hill 112, the numbers had got so much greater that I don't think they really fancied their chances in taking Hill 112 back. Although, of course, it was a very important piece of ground because, as it says for itself, Hill 112, you could see quite a distance from it into the valleys.
Did you know the name of the German unit opposite you?
No, I don't.
Did you at the time know?
We were told that they, the name of the, or the unit, but of course all German troops really look the same. They're slightly different than the British troops. I mean, they have stripes. They have theirs on the collar, their rank, and that have they have on the collar with little blue light type stripes. But meant nothing to us. And then, of course, the difference between, they have a difference between their infantrymen and their tank men, as against us. We don't have any difference, really, other than the berries to side of it. But then they would have had steel helmets on, even us, in the tanks or Bren gun carriers and things like that that we used, the track vehicles. So they're very difficult to pick up. You didn't know Germans, even when you took them prisoner of war. You didn't really know whether they were a corporal or a sergeant or a lance corporal, because they had these little marks on their colours, which, of course, we had them on the stripes on our arms.